You're up. Okay.
House Committee on Revenue will come to order for February 5th, 2009. We are going to take the bill slightly out of order this morning, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2147. Chris?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2147 deals with collections of debts owed to the state. It creates an offset program within the Department of Revenue through which other state agencies can collect debts owed to them. As you recall from Elizabeth Harshenko's presentation last week, I think it was, part of within the Department of Revenue, they do collect debts, some debts, for other agency accounts. The point and in the intent of this bill is to build upon that infrastructure to enhance the state's debt collection abilities. The bill also requires, so most of that agreement is permissive with state agencies, but the bill does require two agencies, the State Lottery Commission and the Department of State Lands, to enter into agreements with the Department of Revenue to establish a data match program to collect upon debts. So that's the core structure.
It looks like I'm going to have trouble with the name.
Gerald
Floyd?
Yes.
Gerald Floyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gerald Floyd. I am the statewide accounts receivable coordinator for the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm here today to ask for your support on House Bill 2147. This creates an offset system within the Department of Revenue, a program that would allow for a data match operation with the Oregon Lottery and State Lands, and also allows for other agencies to participate if they so choose, and would basically take a garnishment process and create it into an offset system to allow us to do the same collection efforts in a more streamlined and cost-effective manner. We've had meetings with all of the stakeholders, including the Division of Child Support, the Oregon Lottery, Department of State Lands, and we've been working out some of the technical details of how this would take place. There have been some concerns raised by the Oregon Law Center and the Department of State Lands regarding some of the language. We would be happy to work with those parties and legislative council to address those concerns. And thank you for the opportunity. Any questions?
Do you have an idea of what areas of the bill may still be in doubt?
The Oregon Law Center had two things. I believe that they intend to speak to those today as well. But basically it had to do with making sure that we had given the proper appeal rights before we did an offset. And we're happy to incorporate that language. They also wanted to look at that the offsets are conducted in a similar manner on funds that would otherwise be garnishable, so we would like to address those in the bill. Department of State Lands would like to make the language just be a little more fitting to how we intend to operate the system itself. It's kind of the general language right now.
So I take it then that the Department of State Lands would like a more specific delegation of authority
to specifically how they would operate their part of the system, yes.
Very good. Does that stimulate any other questions? Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Let's see. Larry, oh boy, I'm going to do this one too. Eiswenger?
Yes, Eiswenger.
My ability to read the printed names today is deficient.
That's okay, Chair. It is Nicewinder. Larry Nicewinder, for the record, Chair and committee members. I'm a deputy of the Oregon Lottery, here today to make a couple comments on the bill. We are neutral on the bill in terms of position. We do have some policy, legal, and practical concerns with the bill that we just want to make sure we put into the record today. The first one really is the potential for the sales and revenue impact that a collection bill represents to the Oregon Lottery. We are a sales organization designed to maximize revenue through those sales, and if the collection efforts enhanced as they would be under this bill would have any negative impact on lottery product sales, there are corresponding adverse impacts potentially on the revenue transfers to the state. So we want to make sure that that's a matter of record. We do want to maximize revenue, and we do that through sales. Anything that potentially could adversely affect the purchasers from doing that is a concern to us. Second thing really to put on the record for you is the consumer avoidance actions. We currently collect for child support about 50 claims per year. As with any collection effort, once players understand the collection mechanism, they find ways around it, and that has a dampening effect on the long-term effects of being able to collect revenue through this mechanism. All lottery prize tickets are bearer instruments, so those who come in with the claim in hand are who gets paid. So people who owe debts, once they understand the collection mechanism, we consider that needs to be considered that their behavior may change. They may have relatives or friends present those tickets, which could have a dampening effect on the collection effort. Just in terms of legal limitations, there are limitations in federal law on how cross matches of databases can be used as it relates to a person's Social Security number, and there are two legal reasons for use requiring Social Security number and using it for data match purposes. One of them is for tax collections, and the other one is for child support. And so this bill does have other types of collections that are beyond those two types, so we would have to make sure that we'd have to set up a data match system that ensures that we don't use the Social Security number in a manner other than that has been legally approved. Without being able to do that, it does create some concerns about absolutely being able to identify a cross match and ensure that you are, in fact, taking a collection from the appropriate person. The last thing is really, in addition to handing out a copy of my testimony, I handed out an Attorney General's legal opinion, and it's just something that we have to be aware of. Lottery can't incur use lottery funds for this type of an effort. There are three constitutional uses for lottery funds, and this isn't in that mix. So the opinion basically says that lottery can participate in this effort, however, it can't use its lottery fund sources to do it. So it's we need to be basically paid for the any costs incurred up front and as we go transaction costs. And so that would be either a direct cost to the agencies involved up front and then a collection fee, if you will, at each transaction just to ensure it's a zero-sum game for the lottery. Those are the four main areas of concern. If the policy choice is made by the legislature that the lottery is going to coordinate the collection of debts owed the Department of Revenue or other public bodies beyond child support, then really lottery's interests are to make sure that not only do we deal with the legal and practical issues, but that we do it in a very streamlined, technology-based way, address those identification issues, make sure that the due process rights and appeal rights to those that are whose collections are made against them are given to them in a timely manner, and then just that we can still transact business in a timely manner. We've got people coming in expecting to walk away with their winnings, less taxes, and so if it takes an inordinate amount of time to process the transaction, that would just further create a deterrent to this being effective without impacting sales. There is another bill similar to this one in House Judiciary. It's House Bill 2317. It does just narrowly define the collection effort for that to include the judicial branch agencies. This bill actually does everything that 2317 does and then covers a broader collection effort. In terms of, as Gerald Floyd testified, we have been working with the parties during the interim to try and iron out the mechanical issues and present to you the best bill that if you're going to pass this and have it, that it would be administratively feasible for us to do. You will see in the bill there's quite a bit of reliance on an interagency agreement that would be established between Department of Revenue and Lottery. Mechanics of that haven't been worked out. Certainly the details behind the database matches haven't been worked out yet, but thankfully the bill has given each of those parties some time to do that should this bill pass. I would like to close by just briefly speaking a little bit to the fiscal impact of the bill. As I mentioned, a lottery has to, if it goes forward in this effort, it has to do it without incurring any, using any lottery funds. We have done time studies on what it takes to do child support. It's a fairly manual collection process. It does take time, and you see in the fiscal impact, if you don't have one before you today, that we've estimated the first year cost would be approximately $189,000. And then second year and each year thereafter, about $170,000. And that's just staff time and costs associated with lottery operations. The estimate is based on about 1,200 collection efforts per year on a cross-match basis. That's 24 times the offset transactions we currently perform. So it's a significant change to us in that respect. We are aware that the state has a lot of collections that it's out there and it's interested in getting. And we know that the odds of collecting big on lottery winners are relatively remote because the odds are high. We do contribute now. We collect actually 8% state tax on large lottery winners by law. So that continues. Haven't seen the detail on the revenue recovery estimates for this yet, but we do know the odds of collecting large amounts are very high. Low. Powerball has a 1 in 195 million chance of it being hit. Megabucks is 1 in 6.1 million. So, you know, the amounts that are being collected, I believe, in the estimate probably reflect collections on significantly smaller amounts. So that's what we would expect. With that, I will close and answer any questions you might have.
Do you have Representative Vance?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, I'm sorry, I couldn't find the amount you expect to collect in that paperwork.
Exactly the question I was going to ask. Thank you.
That really is a question probably best directed to the Department of Revenue or DAS representative, because I haven't actually seen the revenue impact.
Of course, if you're collecting funds for child support, there may not be any revenue impact on us, because, of course, the money goes out to pay child support. But it would be useful to have some sense, if you're spending $170,000 a year,
right,
it might be some use to finding out how much you actually collect on behalf of the of child support.
Yeah, and I don't have that. I don't know if there's anybody here from child support that does.
Okay, thank
Gerald,
you.
Is that something? I don't know if the Department of Revenue or DAS has information on their revenues. I do not.
Okay, Representative Vance.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, is there some estimate of how often this is going to work for us, some number in your mind that's going to come back home as a result of this effort?
The fiscal impact that lottery developed was based on an estimate provided to us by the Department of Administrative Services and Revenue. It was based on approximately 1,180 claims per year where there would be a cross match to someone in their database who has some debt owed to the state. So approximately 1,200 claims per year where there would be a collection opportunity.
Follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how we can spend the $200,000 to put the people in place if I don't know how much money we're going to collect in return for that. So, I mean, I think it's a great idea if there's actually money there.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know. There must have been some thought on the good that would come from this exercise and some number put next to it.
Chair Barnhart and Representative Vance, I believe there probably is a revenue impact statement being developed, or maybe even in development that DAS or DOR has. Unfortunately, they haven't shared that with lottery.
Okay, so what I understand from that is that even though you are collecting money on behalf of other agencies now, you don't know what the amount is because you don't keep track of that when you send the money over.
I could probably get something from either DOJ, Child Support, or potentially from...
But the lottery doesn't keep track of how much money it's transmitting to these other agencies.
I probably could get that. I just don't have it with me today.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Okay. Patrick Tate?
Good morning, Chairman and representatives. For the record, I am Patrick Tate, Unclaimed Property Manager with the Unclaimed Property Section of the Department of State Lands. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2147. Just because we kind of are a unique player in this, a little background on unclaimed property. Companies from all over the United States report unclaimed property to our section. We process those names, and our primary concern is to try to return those funds back to the Oregon citizens to which they belong. So we're primarily a consumer protection kind of an act. And until they're claimed, they are held in the Common School Fund, and the earnings from those funds actually go to benefit K through 12 schools. So our role in this, under the House bill, we will review claims as the citizens make those, compare them against a list that the Department of Revenue will provide, and then if we do find that there's a debt owed, we would arrange to have those funds delivered to the Department of Revenue. And under this, we would also have the duty to notify the owner and the department of the fact that we have put a hold on the funds. We do expect a substantial one-time cost to coordinate this matching process so that it will work smoothly with our normal workflow. And we share lotteries' concern that was expressed earlier that we want to make sure that if we use the Social Security number in this process, that we're using it in an appropriate way, that if we need to do prior notification, people don't want to come to our website. And a Social Security number is one of the most common ways we use to match people up on any claim. And if we're going to use that in another method, I don't know if we need to give them advance warning of that or what our notification responsibilities are. We are currently asking our Assistant Attorney General for advice on that matter. Other than that, We do support the policy behind this bill, and we think it's important that if bills are owed to the state that we're not also paying out to someone at the same time until those have been resolved. And our main issues with this is just to we want to make sure we're not collectors. Our staff are not primarily in that role, and we want to make sure that role is done by the people that have the ability and expertise to do that. And our role is primarily that when we know that someone has a valid claim or debt against property, that we are well equipped to return those funds to the to whoever that is, whether it be revenue or whoever would be making the claim for those funds. And with that, those are my main points. Are there any questions?
Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was curious about the amount, because the value of the unclaimed property for the state, last time I had occasion to look at it, was considerable. Most of it eventually is cheats. Is that correct? Most of the state ends up with ultimately anyway. Is that correct?
Not correct. I think at one time, years ago, the funds did at some point a cheat to the state. They actually primarily sit there virtually forever for the owner to come back or their heir to come back and reclaim those funds. Now, in the meantime, they do earn interest for the Common School Fund, but technically they do not escheat to the state.
What changed? Did we change the law and do away with that rule?
And I don't have exact information on that. I'm fairly new to the program, but I do know that there was a at some point in the past, there was a actual escheat that took place after some period of time. Primarily now, our funds do not technically move, become the state's sole property. They're available for the owners to reclaim.
My final. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. So, with the advent of computer systems and the ability for people to go online and check and see if they actually have you seen an increase in folks actually showing up and asking for their money?
Yes. That's one of the big successes for us, and we continue to improve on that. We have seen a great increase in people claiming money or just seeking their money, even if they do not find funds for themselves. But we are working currently on a process that we hope within the next year we'll be able to actually file, they'll be able to complete their entire transaction online, to be able to file the claim, submit their proof, everything that would they would need to do would be something they could do online.
Actually, a final question. Mm-hmm. So now maybe you could share with us the number, the amount that you anticipate we might collect under this new provision.
That is a very good question, Chair and representatives. I don't know if we have a number. Again, we're not in that role of trying to figure out how much would actually go to the agencies. We mainly just want to make that data available so that if there are debts, they can reclaim those funds. We may be able to look at some historical data we have on garnishments that have been made against us and come up with some figures, but I don't have that at this point.
This bill would allow you to operate in lieu of garnishment, wouldn't
right.
it? With the departments that are named in the bill.
That's correct.
You indicated there would be substantial startup costs to put this into place. Can you give us an indication of what that would be?
Right now, we're anticipating about $20,000, and primarily that's going to be, we have our computer system will need to be modified by our programmers so that we can actually, on a fairly quick basis, be able to, once we have a Social Security number, bounce that against the data that will be stored in another website that Revenue will operate and come back with a match. So our staff are not basically doing a manual process to do this review. It'll actually go out and do that review for us and come back with the information they provide. But that'll be primarily the one-time cost. There will be some ongoing programming cost to that. But our role is really just to we are more than willing to provide our data so that anything that they would find would be available for them to ask for a collection.
Thank you. Anything else? Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on the bill today? Yes, please come forward. Thank you, Mr. Davis.
Thank you so much, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. Sybil Hebb for the Oregon Law Center, and I just wanted to briefly note, I apologize that coming in late, I had a commitment this morning. And the Oregon Law Center represents low-income people across the state of Oregon. Our concern about this bill is not related to the purpose, but just a small piece that we had the opportunity to talk with Marjorie yesterday, and they indicated a willingness to work with us on our concerns, but basically we wanted to make sure that because this is a system that will be set up to operate essentially, as you mentioned, Chair, in lieu of garnishment, that the same principles and concerns that apply to garnishment proceedings would also apply to this offset process. So we would want to make sure that debts that were collected were debts that had been liquidated and which in which the debtor had had the chance to object and or raise any defenses, and we would want to make sure that there was some process by which the debtor had the right to challenge the offset prior to it being removed from funds that they had a reason to expect. We also wanted to make sure that the link to the protected funds that can't be, that are exempt from garnishment, is also applicable to this process. So any subsistence level benefits should be exempt from the process, as well as exempt wages, should the this process be used eventually to take wages. So those were our two concerns, and we've appreciated the Department of Administrative Services' willingness to work on those issues should this bill move forward. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your help. Yes, I see we have another. Ms. Weiser.
For the record, Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon. There was an article in Willamette Week several months ago now about a Japanese firm that is applying for a Betsy grant, so they would get up to $11 million. And they have been in Oregon as a subsidiary in the past and left a super cleanup dump, you know, that's going to cost the state at least $3 million and the federal government probably $30 million to clean up. And I'm wondering if this bill would make it so that we could collect from that company the money that we would otherwise have to take out of a general fund to clean up the mess they left behind from their mining operation. Is that considered in this bill? I have no idea.
That's a very good question, and I don't know either. But you've raised an interesting point. Any questions for Ms. Weiser? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on this bill today? I don't see anyone, and with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2147.
Are we ready?
On the other one? No, just to hear it.
There were still some problems with it.
Yeah, but I mean, we didn't have copies of the bill. Apparently, we did have one.
Yeah.
Not sure. All right, and with that, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2148.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2148 allows a transfer of amounts owed to a state agency from a business entity that dissolves and then essentially reorganizes as the same entity. Now, the language of the bill may seem a bit familiar to those of you who were on the committee in 2007. In 2007, there was Senate Bill 176 that essentially allowed the same thing, but just for the Department of Revenue and it pertained to tax liabilities. So that this bill differs in that it's for other state agencies, not tax liabilities. And Senate Bill 176 did become law in 2007. So it's limited to these reorganized business entities, and it sets, the bill contains criteria for identifying which things can be looked at to determine if this business is essentially the same. And some of those things include whether or not the business operates in the same physical location, if they provide the same services or manufacture the same products, if they have one or more of the same corporate directors or officers. And so those some specific criteria are laid out in the bill.
Okay. It looks to me as though I have three people signed up to be heard this morning. It's quite possible that one of them isn't here because the sign-up sheet I have is from Tuesday and then again from today. The first is again, Gerald Floyd.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gerald Floyd. I'm the Statewide Accounts Receivable Coordinator for the Department of Administrative Services. And House Bill 2148, as Chris summarized so well, establishes the criteria by where an agency that is owed a debt can transfer that debt to a reorganized entity, provides these criteria under which an agency can look at to determine if the new entity has been reorganized or meets the same criteria as the entity that owes the debt.
And this is another tool for agencies to continue their collection efforts and be able to continue their collection practices on those debts.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Questions for Mr. Floyd?
I would just one more thing.
Please.
I would like to mention that we've had some conversations with the Oregon State Bar regarding some concerns that they have with just a few things in there, and that we'd be happy to work with them and legislative council to address those concerns.
Just to Mr. Chen, thank you.
Representative Benz.
Thank you. I had gone through it, and it did appear that it needed some tweaking. Is the proper way to communicate my thoughts regarding the bill to you and then to the bar? Is that how this is going to progress?
We'd be happy to hear any concerns that you have, and as well as we continue to have conversations with the bar to address their concerns as well.
We could consider setting up a small work group to get that work done, and it sounds, Representative Benz, as perhaps you might be volunteering for that.
I'm happy to.
Thank you. Sure. All right. It's a little premature to decide that issue because we have at least one other witness. Any other questions? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps this will be addressed in the work that Representative Benz has graciously volunteered for. But I'm curious as to the wording of in Section 2, Line 7, operating substantially the same business. Wondering how restrictive that phrase is, and if you have the same participants in a business operating a new business, why there isn't more flexibility on the type of the business if it's the same principles involved.
Well, we wanted to make, Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, we wanted to make sure that we were not overstepping our legal authority. We just wanted to be able to take the same business type and the principles of that business, and what this is really designed to do is you're operating a business. Typically, these are small businesses, family members that are listed as the officers, and once the debt becomes too big, they shut down that corporate entity, they start a new one, they switch positions, and start up doing the same thing that they were doing before, but are no longer liable for those debts that were incurred under the old corporation. This is intended to identify those situations and allow the state to continue to collect on those.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. So if, say, Jack and John owed a business, they're making toys, they have a debt that's incurred against them, they shut down and they open up, and now they're making widgets. Obviously, it's a pretty vague hypothetical, but is it intended to apply to that sort of situation, or would they have to continue to make toys, for example?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, as the language of the bill is written, they would have to continue to sell the same products or services as the original entity that owed the debt.
Thank you. Other questions? Do we have any idea what the amounts are that we can collect if something like this were in place?
Mr. Chair, although this has been implemented for the Department of Revenue, they do not have it fully implemented, and so there are no statistics on that. This is not going to be a large quantity of entities. This is primarily intended to be more of a deterrent from these types of actions. But once they do occur, this would allow us to continue our collection efforts.
It would take care of one of the methods that people use to avoid paying their debts.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
And I'm assuming we're talking about entity where a new corporation is set up, not situations where the debt has been extinguished in some way, such as in a bankruptcy situation.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. Any relief under bankruptcy that the original entity has, this would not supersede that.
All right. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. It looks like David Niebel is here. Is Sam Sears here today?
Okay. Mr. Chair, he's not.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Niebel. I work for the Oregon State Bar. Mr. Sears was here on Tuesday but is unable to make it today. I'm appearing on behalf of the debtor-creditor section of the Oregon State Bar and on behalf of the business law section of the bar. As Mr. Floyd mentioned, we have raised some concerns with the department about this bill and the need to clarify this bill, probably in the same ways that Representative Bentz is interested in, and we are happy to work with the department on those issues and come back to the committee with an amended bill. Basically, the areas of concern are the definition of reorganized business entity, the list of factors in the bill that determine whether a business entity is substantially the same business, and the process by which it would be determined when successor liability arises. We want to make sure that that process is fair. So I'm sure that we can work something out with the department, and we look forward to that process. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
In 2007, we passed a law that gave this authority, essential authority, to the Department of Revenue in connection with taxes. Is that bill, is that law significantly different in language than this bill? And if so, does that need some work, too?
Mr. Chair, I'm afraid I do not have that information.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on House Bill 2148? I think Representative Bentz has volunteered to help out a little bit. We'll hope that you gentlemen can figure out where you're going before you involve him, because he's pretty busy. But I appreciate your good offices to help us figure out whether this bill can move or not. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2148, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2091. Asin.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2091 comes to the committee from a request by Secretary of State. This is primarily from the Audits Division. The main interest that this bill is trying to accomplish is try to sequester the interest earned from the monies of the Division of Audits for that use. There are reasons for this by requirements from the federal government, I believe. And that is an intent that this bill is trying to make. The amounts that we seem to be talking about is about $60,000 a year. Remember, all the interest in the state that occurs actually in that sense goes to the general fund, regardless to where it comes. So if this interest would be sequestered for the division, then that would be coming out of that earnings for the general fund.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Barnard, committee members. For the record, I'm Chuck Hibner. I'm the director of the Audits Division.
I'm sorry, would you say it again?
Chuck Hibner.
Thank you.
And I'm director of the Audits Division, Secretary of State. We come here this morning seeking your support for House Bill 2091. I've got some written testimony out there that hopefully answers some of the questions you probably have about this, especially when we're talking about general fund dollars. We consider this more or less a structural issue for us. Just to give you a little bit of background, all the monies that we collect through our assessment and direct billing goes into the Division of Audits accounts, which is held in the general fund. So all the interest that accrues to all of the money that we collect to pay our expenses is, I think use the term sequestered, moved to the general fund for general purposes. The total amount we're talking about here is as Mazen mentioned, was about $120,000 a biennium. I'm understanding that every dollar is important, especially when we're talking about general fund. Still, it's not a huge amount as far as our budget. We have about a $20 million budget. So, in comparison of what we try to collect to pay our own bills, the problem that we ran into is that because we're collecting this money through assessments, the federal government has a particular interest in looking at those dollars. And when we had our most recent audit, yes, we get audited as well, along with the Department of Administrative Services around the assessment, and they were looking at our expenditures. They were asking the question, well, there's this interest that's being accrued, and their interest is in the interest is making sure that it's spent on the same activities that the corpus, the body of the money, is spent on. So it's being collected federal money for audit purposes. They want to ensure that the interest that's accruing is being spent for audit purposes as well. Of course, we haven't got that money. So if we can't spend it, they want us to repay it, which, of course, we haven't got the money, so we can't repay it. We subsequently have paid the bill, but it did come from a future expenditure, which means we're paying it in part with federal money. So that is most likely an expense that upon the next audit will be disallowed. So we'll be kind of in the same position. There's also a mass transit tax, which is an expenditure that's disallowed. They don't want us paying for the mass transit tax that we're obligated to pay out of money that's been designated for audit purposes. They just don't see that as supporting that purpose. So take the interest and the mass transit tax issue, and all of a sudden we've got a small but significant amount of money that we need to be able to repay to the federal government. We haven't got a source of funds to do that. So that's what we're seeking here today is if we can technically move the Division of Audits accounts out of the general fund to where we can collect the interest, then we'd be able to cure the issue of the spending the federal part of that interest on federal acceptable activities. I mean, we just assume that's a part of our normal business activities. We'd also have a portion of that interest that is state interest. I mean, in fact, if you consider that roughly 17% to 20% of that is considered federal, we'd have a state portion of that we'd be able to pay the mass transit tax with, which would take care of that issue for us. And then the balance, if you look at the back page of the written testimony, kind of shows you what the balance is. The easiest approach would be to push that back out to the agencies when we do our biennial reconciliation, which any money we don't expend, because we're collecting it, if it's not spent, we just move it back to the agencies in the same proportion that we collected it. So if they're paying us with general fund and it goes back to them, then in effect they're getting general fund back to spend for their own purposes. So at the end of the day, we're netting out at zero. We'd be taking that interest. And I'm assuming if this passes in future years, we'd be assuming that $120,000 is just a source of income for budget purposes when we submit our budget. And then at the end of the day, at the reconciliation, we'd just push whatever, including that part of the interest, back out to the agencies so they'd have it to spend on their activities.
Thank you. Questions?
Oh, I might add,
yes, please.
Chair Ballard, that there is an amendment. The bill, that, as it was presented to you, after we discovered this issue, we talked to the state controller and the treasurer and said, this is what we've got. What's the best solution? They say, well, you probably need to be capturing that interest in order to spend it. So we presented what we thought was the best alternative. Subsequent discussions with the treasurer's office made us realize that it has to be technically moved out of the general fund. We can't just change the law and say, yes, you can keep the interest. So there's an amendment that has been approved that is over at Legislative Council, I believe, being drafted, that would technically move it out of the general fund. I don't think it's a there's not a lot of verbiage that goes along with that, but it's a pretty significant change to the law.
Thank you. Now, you're in front of the Revenue Committee and not the Ways and Means Committee, so I'm going to ask some questions that they probably already know the answers to, but I don't.
Yes, sir.
I'd like you to back up a little bit, describe what the Audit Division does for the federal government, how you earn money that might lead to the issue that we're describing here, and how that hooks with the mass transit tax, which I also don't know anything about. So that we can get the first piece of the picture. What you've given us is a solution to a problem that we don't know, that at least I personally don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm, certainly.
It would be helpful if you could back up for
certainly.
That purpose.
Certainly. Chair Barnhart, we do roughly 60% of our audit activity is done on the statewide audit and the federal compliance audits that need to be done for the state in order for us to receive the roughly $6 billion in federal funds. That's a federal mandate, the statewide, not the audits division. We don't get that money, but it has to be completed, the audits and the federal compliance audit work. So the federal government allows...
Okay, let's stop for a second there. What I think you've just said is that the federal government requires the state of Oregon to audit our expenditures of federal funds to make certain that we have met the federal requirements for the use of those funds.
That would be correct. We do that in terms of the comprehensive annual financial statement, the big opinion audit for the state. That falls into that category.
Okay.
Of work that they require us.
Then there's some other things also.
There's certain. A-133 is the number, but they're federal requirements for all grant funds. We have to do certain amount of audit work and submit a report in March that shows that the expenditure of those funds were appropriate. So there's additional audit work we call federal compliance work that works along with the opinion audit work we do. And that represents roughly 60% of what we do is the audits division.
But this is sort of routine work.
This happens every
all
year.
All the time.
That's right. That's correct.
Right. And now, then my next question is that, if I understand you correctly, the federal government allows you a charge to complete this work on their behalf.
That is correct. That comes through the agencies that we're doing the work for, in the form of the assessment that we push out every quarter. But they're allowed to pay a certain percentage of any audit work that we do for them with them to come from federal funds. Like for the Department of Human Services, it may be 50% federal and 50% state. So they'll make sure, of course, they're paying us with the right combination of funds. So that's how the federal funds make it to us. We aren't out there asking for federal funds. We send the bill to the agency. The agency pays us with whatever funds they can or are willing to pay us with. And that's how we get the federal funds. And the federal government wants to make sure that those agencies that are paying us for audit services, and that's what the audit was about, was that we're spending them on audit activities. Now that's also where the mass transit tax comes in. When they were reviewing the expenditures that we pay, they looked at the mass transit tax as a line item and said, "Well, how does that support federal audit activities? You know, it isn't like it's a personnel cost. It isn't like it's a computer." So they looked at that and said, "Well, we disallow that. That isn't something you should be paying with federal money." So though we're obligated to pay it because it's in the list of expenses we pay. It can't be paid with federal money.
So what is the mass transit tax?
Chair Barnhart, I wish I knew precisely where it came from. I just know it comes in my line items every year. I believe it was something that was given to the agencies to pay to help pay for some mass transit things that were happening in Portland. I don't know.
We're talking about the payroll tax?
Mr. Chair, it is part of the payroll tax. It is to support the mass transit, where mass transit activities occur.
And state agencies pay that.
Everybody pays it.
Everybody pays it. Okay.
Yes, sir. Except the federal government.
You can see that I'm not a Ways and Means guy, so I'm sure they understand all of this, but I don't. Okay. All right, now let's talk about this interest, because I've got a better sense of where we started from.
Right.
All right, so what effect does this have on your budget and on the state general fund to make this change? The overall effect.
Okay.
Take me through the steps.
Okay. The overall effect for us, if we were able to accumulate the interest first on the general fund, would be it wouldn't be in the general fund to be spent. So it would be an immediate reduction of the general fund of
yes.
Approximately $120,000. For us, it would not affect the limitation. It would just be another source of funds for us. And it would specifically give us a pool of state funds that because it would be the interest on the state portion of that money that would allow us to pay minimally some expenses that maybe the feds would not want us to be paying our assessment money on. So that's why I tried to dramatize that in the chart on the back, so you can kind of see that if you consider a part of that interest is just state money that we can pay the mass transit tax money with, or other sorts of expenditures that may disallow, that gives us some flexibility to do that. Right now, we don't have a source of funds that would allow that to happen. So I would assume that in the long term, if we weren't ever able to cure this thing, we'd have to come and ask for some general fund in order to cure it. That's, again, just me thinking out. But
all right, so there's immediate reduction in the general fund,
right,
based on this.
Right.
But your budget doesn't necessarily change.
No, sir. What would happen is we take this money in, and assuming that now we have an additional 100 for this biennium, if
right,
we were to start, we get
it. Let me cut to the chase. I think what you're telling us is that making this change would allow us to spend federal funds on things that we're not allowed to spend federal funds on now because of the way it's set up, and it would reduce our overall costs because the federal government would pay part of those costs that they now don't pay. And I've understood that correctly.
I don't believe so, Chair Barnard.
You better try again then.
Yeah. No, okay. I think what it allows me to do is to get a pool of funds from the interest. One, the interest that's earned, the federal government wants to make sure the federal portion of that, which is roughly 20% of that money now, is going to federally accepted activities. In this case, audit activities, because that's what it was paid to us to do. Well, we weren't able to show that because we don't even have that money. So we would have that portion to do that with. The state part of that interest earnings, which would be the bulk of it, would allow us to earmark that money to pay a mass transit tax, which the federal government doesn't want us to be paying with their money at all. But the interest portion, at least, would be theoretically state money that we could do that with. And the balance of that interest, we'd be in a position then to push back out to the agencies, I mean, because we wouldn't need the money to spend,
right,
necessarily, when we do our biennial reconciliation of unspent money, just along with every other fund. So what it's really doing for us is allowing us flexibility. The agencies will be getting the money back. If they were paying us in general fund, they'd be getting back general fund. They could assume, I guess, if we were to earmark that interest as being sent back to the agencies, they'd be getting some state fund, general fund as well. So, but it's not huge. It certainly wouldn't cure a lot of problems for agencies, but we do try to be lean and push back as much money to the agencies we can at the end of the day, and that would be a part of that reconciliation.
Let me ask my question a different way. I think what you're saying is that there are now some expenses that are attributable to the federal audit that are not being paid by the federal government because we cannot demonstrate that the funds from which they're being paid are actually federal funds.
Chair Barnard, I think it's almost the inverse, if I may. It's that there's things we're doing as an agency, like paying mass transit tax as an example, that the federal government doesn't think is an audit activity, and we shouldn't be paying that with federal funds. So they're asking us to pay that with something other than, which every dollar we get has a percentage of federal funds, so we can't just take half of that dollar and pay it to them, because then it changes the proportion, and now we've got a problem with that. So we just are trying to find an easy way to, one, answer the question from the federal government, are you spending that interest on acceptable audit activities? And two, how are you going to pay for mass transit tax if you haven't got a distinctly state part of money. So,
right. But the result of all this is that the federal government wants $120,000 back a biennium, or no, they want $20,000 back a biennium, because you can't demonstrate that's an amount they actually owe because you can't apportion it correctly.
It'd be about $29,000 because of the mass transit issue as
Thank
well.
You.
But yeah, that would be about $30,000
okay.
a biennium,
all right.
unless
I,
their percentage goes
I,
up.
I probably haven't asked the question correctly, but I think the answer to my question is yes, indeed, this would increase our capacity to collect and use federal money, which now we have to return to them because we haven't accounted for it in the way that they demand.
In this past biennium, Chair Barnard, that would be correct.
Thank
we did have to pay that. We
Thank
have
you.
To pay
I think
that.
I now
yeah,
understand.
I'm sorry. I wasn't
does that Does that provoke any other questions from members? I know I'm beating this one to death, but
Mr. Chair,
I'd like to at least understand what the bill says that we're working on. Yes.
I need just to correct please. Something. When I said everybody pays mass transit tax, it's actually payroll that resides in
Mass Transit District.
In the districts, right. That would be in Lane Transit District and in TriMet District, and maybe there may be another one somewhere. I don't know about
true.
It. Yeah.
In addition, Mr. Chair, I think the idea is we are not going to be penalized. Otherwise, the federal government will penalize the Audits Division for the payments for spending money on things that they don't consider appropriate.
Right.
That's so they're trying to avoid the penalty that comes.
Right. Well, my suggestion is you go back and when the amendment comes, if that is going to work for us, you present it to us again. My bet is that, I don't speak for the other committee members, but my bet is we'll send it on to the Ways and Means Committee that actually understands this issue better than we do. And if you can convince them that we'll actually be $29,000 to the good when it's all done, I suspect they'll pass the bill out.
Okay, be happy to discuss the amendment, and I'll work on that presentation. We'll see if we can.
Thank you very much. Well, they may understand this stuff.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Anything else? Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on this bill today? House Bill 2091.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I don't see anyone. It looks like we have exhausted. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2091. It appears that we have exhausted our agenda for today. Recall, colleagues, that there is no meeting tomorrow. We next meet on Monday at 8 o'clock, unless on some unusual circumstance there's a call for a meeting before then. I do not expect it.
Another.
With that, committee is adjourned.